You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan. Thanks for being here. And today I'll be speaking with two individuals on the occasion of the publication of their new book entitled My Dead, published on Kelsey Books. That'll all be in the description. And the two individuals are poet, writer, John Brantingham, whose work has been featured in many places, hundreds of magazines and volumes, and Jane Edberg. Jane has been on this podcast before. And they've collaborated in this fascinating book, very moving. The work is very moving, the poetry and the accompanying art. I hope you like it.
Okay. Well, here we are.
So Jane Edberg and John Brantingham, welcome to Curiosity Invited. And
thank you. Thanks for
being willing to give up your time and speak about what you want to speak about. And you are here, well, you're here because you seem to be nice people, but also on the occasion of just recent, right? The publication of your new book.
Mm-hmm. And
it's a collaborative in the book, and you're going to hold up a copy or something? Everybody's got one except me. But I have a PDF. So, and it is called My Dead. And once again, it's on Kelsey Books.
That's Kelsey right. Books.
And it's recently published, right? It just happened.
Just this month. Yeah.
And what makes it unique? Well, I'm not sure. You tell me. I mean, it is a collection of poems and artwork. John, all this will be in the, well, most of it will be in the description, but certain some of it will be in the intro, which I've already done. But you're a poet and writer,
yeah.
Mostly known for poetry. Or is this not?
I'm mostly known, I guess, for poetry and for what's called flash fiction, which is just exceptionally short fiction.
Got it.
Exceptionally
short.
So maybe 100 words.
That's short.
And maybe I'll get it down to just a single word at some point. I don't know.
Right.
I'm really good at that. and Jane Edberg, Jane was on the Curiosity Invited way back, right?
Yes.
Almost when I first started, right?
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And it was when you were just about complete writing that book about the death of your son. The title,
The Fine Art of Grieving.
Oh, so that's the final title.
Yeah.
And it is soon to be published, or is it?
Yes, March 25th, 2024.
Fabulous.
Can I put a plug there? It's a life-changing book, what Jane has written. To read it is to really see the world in a completely new way.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, John.
That's lovely.
Yeah. That was my intent anyways.
But that's not what this is about, My Dead. So My Dead title is, where's mm-hmm. that from? And then let's talk a little bit about the process. But
well, my dead is a repeated refrain, not in just these poems, but in a lot of my poems. And it's about, you know, the dead who have kind of haunted me my whole life because they're dead before I was born, but I'm still close family members to them. Mm-hmm. And also the people who have passed who I've known. I always say I can argue as much as I want with my dad, but I'll never win the argument.
Oh, exactly.
I
like to
change
right.
their minds. They're kind of always in there informing. And it's become much more I guess, relevant to me now because I've moved out of Los Angeles and to upstate New York, which is where my family and my dad reside. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
If they were alive, if they were alive today, they'd be rolling around in their graves, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's an interesting area with a sort of dwindling population. And my family was here, but they're much older than I am. So they're gone.
Is that where you grew up?
I grew up in a mixture of maybe 100 miles south of here in Pennsylvania, but for a very long time in Southern California as well.
Yeah, got it.
This is kind of the motherland, the fatherland, something like that.
Okay, so tell me, how did this, first of all, well, I don't know which is first of all, but how did this collaborative effort come about? Well, and you can fight it out. You can decide.
Well, Jay and I have known each other for a good while, and we met at a program that I ran in Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Park for artists and writers, and she was both. And she came up, and I loved her art. And I my wife knows a lot about art. I know nothing. And I saw Jane's art, and we started talking about her art and what she does. And then, maybe you should take it from here, Jane.
I was asking you what you were working on, and you shared those little stories with me, and I immediately had sort of visions about them and sort of springboarded off of them immediately, like, this is amazing, because these short stories had so much brevity that you could just dig in with all kinds of levels of content. And I thought, wow, what if I did visuals for that? So I asked John if that would be okay. And then when I set out to do it, I discovered that there was this conversation that sort of started with the writing and my artwork that I hadn't really considered. I'd done illustrations before, but I hadn't really gotten into a conversation that is, you know, when a writer looks at artwork, they do ekphrastic writing about the artwork. And so they springboard off the artwork. But I realized I was springboarding off of his work. And I felt a little self-conscious about it, but I sent him one of my drawings and he just went, wow. And I went, ooh, well, that's good. Maybe we could collaborate. Yeah. And I said, do you want to send me some more? Yeah, wow is good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he did. He wanted to send more. And as I read through them, there were certain ones that really I was attracted to and felt like I understood the story, but also wanted to add to the story. So I did take some risks in giving more visual information than was even in the poem. And I thought, he might not like this, you know, I might step on his toes, but he did. It was a very interesting exchange between us. And I thought about it. And in fact, today I was thinking about it, John, in that we talked about that trust factor when you work with another artist or I consider you an artist, a writer, another creative, that there has to be a bond of trust there to do that, you know. And I've always trusted you from the beginning. I met you and Anne, and I really trust Anne. And so it's partly because of that relationship. Then I was thinking about it further today, and the other thing that I realized is that there are qualities about John that I really admire, and I'm still trying to grow up, you know. And the things that I really like about him is his sense of empathy and his sense of compassion and inclusivity and his sense of wonder, you know? And I think I have those things, but I have to be reminded. And so working with John reminds me that I can do that, you know, that's something that's really good to aspire to. He's just really got that down. So I really like that. I admire that very much.
John, you were about to say something.
Well, I mean, I think that's the great thing about collaboration is it's easy to get away from wonder. You know, it's easy to fall into the anger and angst of the day or whatever. But if you're working with somebody, you can really get an outside view of your own life, and it really opens you up to get beyond ego questions and into like just what is special about this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Just the big thing.
Yeah.
That thing. Yeah. Yeah. Indeed.
Yeah.
But just to clear up for me, so was the, were your first drawing, were any of your first drawings when you started that process, or the out, or that, you know, when you walked up to him and said, hey, I'd like to, are they some of the drawings in the book?
They're all the drawings in the book. What's kind of amazing about the thing is there were no poems that were really taken out. There were no drawings that were not included. And so the first drawing was, so when, I can actually.
When did you start working on this together?
During the COVID.
COVID. So this really was the beginning of that. That was the beginning of this process. Got it.
I would call this book a story. This story is about that. This story is about all of the big stuff that was happening that caused a lot of fear and anxiety and worry about death and disease and all of, you know, the whole shebang and what's right and what's not right. And there were other political things going. There's just a lot of stuff to deal with. And then John goes for a walk and looks at something really simple, like somebody leaving a blanket on his car, and turns it into this incredibly empathetic and beautiful concern about other. And I just think that's remarkable, you know, to wipe all the other crap out of the way and go, we're still here and we still care. You know, something quite wonderful about that.
Oh, thank you.
So let me share that first image.
I love that image.
Mm-hmm. And that was the first one. I'm like, it was about walking out
into 120 degree weather, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And just that missing of things. Things are missing, you know. Yeah. And the black hole part with little speckles is thinking about a snow day, you know, like it's sort of like this dream bubble that this person can't get, and he's just like raging with heat, you know, but not in an angry way, just like that's what it feels like in that time of day. Yeah.
And
I gotta say, anything that's innovative or interesting about this book from a artistic, it's all Jane, right? Because she's doing something new. I'm just writing poetry, and she's got this new whole approach to stuff. It's really interesting.
But your approach too is, I think, really interesting, because you, like I said, there's some brevity in there. They're very short poems, but they say it's just a world. You create these microcosms of emotion, and it's something that anyone can relate to. It's just anyone can relate to it. That's what I love about it so much. But thank you.
Well, yeah, and it's also that, you know, I don't know. I barely know John. I know you for such a long time. It's been at least 15 minutes, but there is that thing that very, very skilled writers do, that, oh, just this little thing. Oh, shucks. Nah, there's nothing special there. That aw shuck stuff doesn't work around.
Right. Here. And it's all done in this little tiny space of words, you know. It's remarkable. Yeah.
So, but Jane, let me ask you, or maybe both of you, you made reference to it before, and on the title of the book, Poetry by John Brantingham and Edimphrastic Art. And you made reference a little moment ago about you had illustrated books before, but this is not that. Why is this not that? I don't understand that piece.
Illustration, when I've worked as an illustrator, I'm trying to get exactly as close as I can get what the author wants in their book. The colors, the lines, the schematic, the style, the logic of it, the meaning of it, all of that. That it matches, you know, exactly what they're trying to say. In this work, I didn't do that. I actually would read the poem, kind of just take it in as a gestalt the first time, and then read it again and start to notice images popping up. And then I'd read it again and take notes, because there was so much there in such a short period of time that I had to do that. And so in many of them, I would you know, circle, outline, highlight certain areas. And then I would start to play with little images and colors and thoughts and jot down ideas about that. And then I thought, I was confused because I would start to think about other things. When, you know, he talks about a blanket left on his car, maybe somebody thought his car was abandoned. And then he was very concerned about the blanket and why would somebody leave it there and where are they now? And I thought about homeless people and I thought about how through all the thick and thin of life, we are go through life with blinders to get from point A to point B. And sometimes we miss these details about the ways that other people are living. You know, in that image, I made a wall and I blocked out the window because it's sometimes like that. We may have a window that's available to us to see the world, a metaphorical window. And we keep it blocked up so that we can survive, you know, or not have to think about certain things. Or, but every so often, it's a really good idea to take a peek out there and understand the humanity that's at hand. And so this is the image from that poem. And I don't know, John, do you have the poem there in front of you at all?
I have it open to that page.
Perfect.
Before I even read this, can I just say, Jay never saw the place that I was living, but it looks almost exactly like that. And we didn't have windows. It was I'd opened a gallery, a live workspace gallery, and it was just bricks with no windows. So it's very much like that.
Oh, wow.
So this is 4:30 a.m. I take my morning tea outside to see if the sun is coming up yet. Across the alley, a possum stops and watches me. Trying to intimidate me, maybe. Or maybe he's just watching. Someone last night must have thought my car, with its busted headlight, was abandoned. They've spread a blanket over it to dry. I wonder where they are now that they do not need their blanket. I wonder where they were when it got wet.
And just the simplicity of that is like, so the need. And even though it's just a possum, there's kind of this thing about the possum intimidating, but it's like, well, maybe the possum also needs something and doesn't know how to ask for it, which can, you know, also look like people that can't ask for things, or they've asked for things, but they can't get them, or they're not even sure what they need, or they do know what they need. And again, it's impossible. And then I thought about the blanket and that a blanket, you know, could be used for sleep, but it might have also held two people that loved each other, cared about each other, or could hold a yearning of wishing there was someone else to hold. Like a blanket can be a lot of different things and it can hold a history. And we don't know the history of that. And in fact, here we have a person standing outside kind of wandering around and it's raining and they're under this blanket and the blanket becomes this sort of cocoon of ideas of whose blanket was it? What do they need? What do I need? What, you know, what is happening to the world? What is the, I love that the word abandonment was in there. What's abandoned? Am I abandoned to my ideas of everything's going to be okay? Or am I abandoned to understanding the, you know, various aspects of humanity? Or am I really abandoned? Or is that person abandoned because no one has taken the time to see what their humanity is? So I tried to bring that compassion into this particular piece.
Let's talk a little bit about this process. Well, first of all, was there ever a back and forth? Like, you know, somebody would either send a work in progress or a work that you thought might be complete, and then the other person had a comment about it, whether it was the visual work or the poetry, and something changed, or was it?
Yeah, I mean, no, except like sometimes we just get to talking. She said, "Where is this? What does this look like?" And I'd send her a Google image, just, you know, Google Street View, And that
would not
necessarily change what she's doing at all, right? Uh-huh. But it just kind of informs the discussion or something like that.
Yeah. And was that probably the only thing that we discussed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Was there ever a no, that's not it at all, or in either direction?
No, but when we tried to do another body of work, there was that. What does that mean? It's all very curious. We finished this piece, right? That's a book, My Dead and All the Images. And literally it was, John wrote poems. He sent them to me. I picked ones that I was responding. So there were, he sent me a lot, and I picked some that I was particularly attracted to, and he didn't mind at all. It wasn't a discussion at all. And I made images, I send them, and it was really like, he's just doing this. And I'm like, yay. Because sometimes I got a little bolder, and sometimes sometimes she disagrees with me. I love that so much. Yeah. And he let that happen. And that was so good. So for me, it was like this trust bond that really allowed the work to expand off into its own little micro world from the world that he created.
Did you say sometimes he did disagree with you?
No. I disagreed with, he told me that I disagreed with him, but it was, yeah.
Her art becomes kind of an argument about what the meaning of the poem is, right, which is fantastic, right? I mean, it's,
yes.
I think most notably, I've got this dog who, I guess the young people would say that she's thirsty. I have to control her because she just wants to lick people's faces. So as soon as we get anywhere near, she can jump. So she'll jump and start licking. And so I have to like just hold her back constantly. And so I read a poem about this. And I'm saying, Lizzie really needs to touch people. And Jane was in her art. It's like, no, you're the one who needs to touch people. You're the lonely one. Which is brilliant. You know, of course I need human contact. Just like everyone does.
So you're now walking around licking people.
I've toned down a bit, but
that's good.
I can usually control myself.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. So,
that's amazing. I think, right? Isn't it that there's a collaboration effort on a relatively complex body of stuff.
Yeah.
And that it felt like this.
Yeah, it just went together.
Just amazing, really.
Right.
Well, acrostic writers will do that all the time. You know, they take and they expand what the other writer has said. I don't know if you know this. There's this 300-year-old conversation that goes on between the nymph, the shepherd, and a nymph, and it goes through John Donne and Christopher Marlowe and several different writers, and they keep replying back and forth to each other, each disagreeing with the other. It's like the shepherd say, "Come on, let's go out and have some fun," and the nymph will reply, "It's like, yeah, but you're going to dump me." But it takes like 100 years between the conversation. You know, it's a wonderful tradition. You know, as poets, we're doing this all the time. It's really fun to see Jane take this up and say, "Oh, wait a second, you're not seeing it from this point of view. You're too close to yourself, maybe, to see what you're thinking, you're saying, or doing."
Yeah,
but I understand why you don't want to call it illustration, and that it needs another word.
Yeah.
So you came up with Edim. I hope I say it right, but
yeah,
edimphrastic. Right. Why? What's the what? Why? Are you,
John, you're
that?
Good at explaining that.
Yeah. Well, I think etymology is my thing.
Yes,
Edim is in the term etymology. Etymology is the science of the word. Ology, right. And the word Edim is just the word. And then ekphrasis is conversations about art, right? Ek being art and phrasis. This is a conversation about the word, but we didn't want to confuse the two, right? We want to say, well, it's something, but it's not exactly this thing. It's a conversation about language and about speaking and about, you know, how we, I'm fascinated with language. Otherwise, I teach English, you know, I wouldn't have been teaching English for the longest time. One of the things fascinates me about it is that you're your scope of understanding and vision is limited by the words that you have, right? Jane's giving us a completely new language, right? She's giving us a new way to understand, new way to see, new way to conceive. And so it goes even beyond language. It's extraordinary. And so the conversation can go in places where, you know, if we were limited to English or limited to just words, it couldn't possibly go.
Mm-hmm. I think other artists have done this, but not the way that we have done it. Like, I think that the artists I've known and read about and so forth might be influenced by a particular writer, and that comes into their work somehow, but they're mm-hmm. not collaborating necessarily with the writer, in that there's the writing and then the art. And I'm just use the word springboard because that's the best way I can think about it, where they take off on their own journey visually. It goes with it, but it's different than it, you know.
You know, I was trying to think of instances of this sort of process before, and the one that kept popping up, and I'm not sure if that's the only way they were, but the story of, you know, Elton John and Bertie Taupin's 30-40 year relationship of song, right? Yeah. So some Taupin would write these poems or stories and send it, and then it would come back as a song.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And yeah. Are you prepared for the disagreement? I mean, not that it's inevitable, but
between us?
Disagreement about, you know,
I mean, if
somebody
if,
sends something and it's like, what are you, crazy?
I think I did that a couple times.
Yeah, but if Jane gets really angry at me, there's 3,000 miles between us, and you know, she has to be really angry. As I said, they'd be okay with me if we disagreed. I mean, it would be interesting to see my art from somebody else's point of view. Mm-hmm. And I have one of the things I teach in college is critical thinking, and the first statement is, I've been wrong in the past, and I'll be wrong in the future. And I know when I'm wrong, right? So maybe it's important to listen to when you.
Yeah.
When, yeah. I'm sorry, Regina, cut you off there.
No, that's okay. Well, so our next project is interesting in that, but the rule that we have for this next book is that he sends me a piece of writing. I do an edemphrastic response to it. I send it to him and he does an ekphrastic response to the artwork. And then I go back and edemphrastically respond to his ekphrastic response. So it's almost ek edemphrastic collaboration.
Slick.
Yeah.
But the mistake that I made was I wrote about a famous artist to an art history professor, and then she went off and just I didn't know so well. So it took me a good 2 months to get back.
Right, you had to like watch videos and do some research.
So can I switch gears for just a second? And this kind of grew out of, I don't know if it grew out of, but it certainly was at the time of COVID. How did COVID, if it did, affect, have a role other than it was that time or you were thinking about it in your work? Did it change anything about what you created, whether it was the poetry or the artwork, and did it change you and your orientation to your work?
Good question. Go ahead, John.
Just as a person, I'm obsessive and I'm a worrywart, and so suddenly I you know, this is going to sound like heroic terms. Everybody was doing heroic things during the time, right? Especially people who are doing things like working in food service, right? I mean, that's heroic. But I started just obsessing about my students, and I couldn't see them except for I started teaching everything on Zoom, and because I couldn't talk to them the way that I normally did, I opened it up the first week. I did office hours 3 hours a day, every day, Monday through Sunday, the first week I thought, well, they'll slow down. They never slowed down. There was never a point in that entire semester when I didn't have students during those office hours that were there completely. And I started obsessing about them, started worrying about them. You know, working in the community colleges, I had a lot of homeless students. 20% of our students are homeless. And they're trying to, you know, live on the street during COVID, keep a job. Okay, so I'm obsessing about them, and so I decided that I needed to have moments when I wasn't thinking about that. You know, from 9 a.m. until 9 p.m. I could think about that, but before that, I'm not going to. So these were written. I take a 5 a.m. walk, and I'd say I'm going to think about something other than like what I'm obsessed about right now. And so I'd see 7-Eleven, or I'd see a blanket, or I'd see, so I'm going to write a poem about that. And that was really my process, and it's how COVID changed me, right? Yeah. Because I've always been kind of an imagistic poet, but that became much more important. And it really profoundly changed my focus in I think, life. You know, I'm less concerned about that career. I'm more concerned about the work. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, and it really, really changed me in that I gave up tenure and moved from LA to New York after COVID, because it's like, well, you know, I'm not doing very interesting, good work there in some ways, right? Working with students is great, but I want to do new kinds of work. So now I'm teaching in the prisons, and I'm writing full time, and it really changed me.
Yeah.
And for me, I think it was that not many people were talking about, and they still don't talk about COVID and the COVID experience. I hardly ever hear people talk about it. Mm. There's not very much reflection about it. It's kind of like it came in like this big storm, and then it left, and then all these other things happened that we haven't even had time to marinate in it. And so I think the thing that happened for me is that I saw these little snippets of relief that John was writing. Mm. And they were often called pre-dawn or twilight. He used the words twilight. And there's something about that metaphorically as well, is that stop for a minute, you know, get in the twilight of what's, you know, there are other things happening that are very important. And I waited till everybody went to bed, went in my studio by myself, and just most of those drawings were done at about 10 to midnight. Hmm. Just in this isolation with those words, working on that. And taking that in and understanding a moment from a moment, you know, both very important.
Yeah. You know, I think what's interesting, and it just occurred to me right now for the first time, is both Jane and I are willing to consider the concept of death and how it affects life, and as opposed to trying to run from it, which is, I think, a really bad choice because, you know, you start to get, you know, you start doing all these sort of denials and you get complexes and that sort of thing. And Jane's discussion of death is much richer and deeper than mine, having done all this grief work. But I think it's important to be able to speak about it. And that was a time where it was happening a lot. I think we've all lost friends to COVID.
Yeah.
Well, I was afraid that I was going to die. I mean, you know, I thought if I get this, I've got a heart issue. Boy, oh boy, that would be bad, you know. And then are my family members and my friends and, you know.
Yeah, I think it's
on top of everybody else, all the numbers that we were hearing.
Yeah, the numbers are staggering. And especially the earliest images, right? The, you know, the images that were being leaked out of China, or at least reputedly out of China. And, you just watch people fall over on the street and it's like, what is happening here, right? If that's real, something really weird
going
on.
It's like a science fiction movie that's become real,
Yeah. It's, but what's amazing to me about it is, it terrified people at first. It then took on a life that had nothing to do with COVID and everything to do with people's understanding about the world and how to institutions and where do you rest weight and how do you know where to put your foot next when everything is so weird and squishy and you don't know what's real and what's not. Then just as quickly, it's like, okay, it's gone. And so, you know, I go back and forth periodically to LA because of work. And I'm usually the only person, maybe one or two, and in the multiple airports, planes, etc., I'm the only person who wears a mask.
Yeah.
in those environments. And, you know, do I have to wear a mask? I don't know. Right. I mean, but there still are mutant yeah. bugs out there. Like, yeah. and yeah, I'm vaccinated, whatever, but that's so. We all know what that could mean or might mean or doesn't mean or whatever. And yet it's gone. It's gone. It's just gone. Really? Really? Yeah. So there's this thing that could, and I'm, that's for me, that's where the question comes from is like, has it affected you? Because you spent you didn't just live through this time. You dove in and with your work and spent a lot of, you know, it's like you didn't just make a croissant the way McDonald's makes croissants. You know, you did it the French way. You folded the dough and you buttered it, and then you fold it again and you buttered it, and you kneaded the dough. And I mean, it's that process of making something. Uh-huh. And yeah. so I'm so curious about the way that has affected people or not. Like, it's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah. that's where that all came from.
No, that's very important to think about, because I think that having been in that COVID era, we both were isolated to being at home. And if we could go out, but, you know, it was limited. And in one of his poems, he's, you know, where he says he has to hold Lizzie back 6 feet, you know, he's abiding by some rule that we all learned, you know, it's all very interesting and weird. And yeah, I'm not seeing a lot of work about that, but this work isn't about it, but it's like those are the things that he needed to do in order to survive it, you know, and feel integrated in his own life, in his own space.
And you know, it's easy for before COVID, and it's easy now for everyone to, including me, I'm sort of the king of this, just go around about my life unconscious to what my life is, right? Just, I'm an ambitious person. I wanted to do a good job in my work. I wanted to accomplish all these things. And so just being focused on your own reality and not kind of seeing the world for what it is, walking around this ideal that we live in a banal world and our lives are banal. It's very, very easy to do that. And mm-hmm. I think the COVID experience helped me to draw me out of that. Although I was conscious that that's a bad idea, it was easy for me to say, like, I can't tell you how many times I said, oh, thank God, I only have 6 more weeks to the end of the semester. If I can just, like, kind of just do, well, that's a horrible, like, I'm going to throw away 6 weeks of my life. It's
yeah. ridiculous. Yeah.
And it's helped me to get out of that and sort of like yeah. wander around and see, I hope, right? And I hope I don't slip back into this sort of, oh, I don't know, seeing the world through the eyes of the rat race.
Yeah. Right? It doesn't seem, I've been witnessing you over the, you know, this year, a couple years. I don't know how long you've been in Jamestown now. How long has it been?
Almost 2 years now.
Almost yeah. 2 years. That is not happening. You know, yeah. You're really working on some deeper, really rich stuff. I feel the same way. Like, I don't feel like I have time to spare now, you know? Like,
John, are you going to be able to like write a book of poetry without artwork in it from now on? Or
I don't know. It seems like a waste of time, doesn't it? Seems half done.
What was I thinking?
Half done.
maybe I'll start doing stick figures of my own or something.
There's a way in which, you know, you two started this thing and you've had this kind of ideal collaborative experience.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that would you urge other, take your pick, writers, artists of any sort to try this thing? I don't mean necessarily words and visual art, but to collaborate like that. I mean, do you think there's something rich about it that
absolutely
Mm-hmm. So just to say, we're both art professors, right? I did creative writing and Jane did visual arts. And it was one of my assignments. It's like you're very much, you're so obsessed on the thing that you think you should write that you don't even see what you have to say sometimes. Mm. And I'd ask them, I'd force them to collaborate in some way, just as a way of getting out of themselves. I remember one of my students said, you know, he really loved Stephen King. He loved horror, but damn it, now he's going to have to move to literary fiction because that's what matters in this world. Like, you're out of your mind. No, stick with the horror, right? You've got something to say. You've got something beautiful to say. But it took him working in a collaboration with another person to kind of see, this is who I am. I don't have to be, you know, Graham Greene. I can be Stephen King or I can be myself. Inspired by these people.
Yeah.
And I think that that's an important part of the collaboration, is to get outside of your head and outside of your philosophies and ego. And I'm sure Jane has absolutely genius things to say.
As usual. okay, here's one. I think that not only that, so it's interesting to collaborate within your discipline. I've done that before. I collaborated with other artists where we create a work together. But doing it with someone outside of your discipline, even though I'm a writer, but I was using my art form, visual arts, to work with John, those are really different. Words and art, or I'll call it visual arts, are really different, but they have ways in which they can intersect. So I think that's a wonderful thing to discover. And I'd love to see more of it. I'd love to see artists working with musicians. And I know this does happen, but I'd like to see more of it. I think that what happens sometimes is that we're pigeonholed into our artwork, and we don't really want it to change. I mean, I've experienced that myself, and I know other artists that do that because that's what sells. They're in a gallery, they're being supported to produce a certain body of work. And I think it happens to writers too. You can get pigeonholed, or actors, anybody that's a creative can get kind of pigeonholed into a certain thing. So there is a risk involved, many risks involved, getting involved with somebody else, and especially in a different discipline, to make, you know, art out of that. Although Ada Limon and, I can't remember her partner's name. I wish I could remember it. But they did a Letters from the Sky, and it was in the New Yorker, and they did epistolary letters back and forth, and they never discussed them. Ada would write to Natalie Diaz.
Oh.
And Natalie Diaz would write back to her. And they did that for about, I don't know, months or something. There was a certain period of time. And they're beautiful. And they were shown in the New Yorker. Now I think they're going to be some kind of film, which is, you know, wonderful. So it's being revisualized in some other way, which is quite fantastic. And they didn't even set out to look for that to happen. It was an organic thing, and it was very authentic. So there are things that can happen where you have to trust the person that you're working with. That would be key. Trusting and allowing an openness and a flexibility, because there are going to be times when you disagree.
Yeah, right. Hasn't happened for
you. It's partly like you kind of want that in a way with someone that you trust, you know, so that something is pushing and pulling against itself, and it takes on a life of its own. I think when it's too polished or too, like if we had conversations about exactly how it was going to come together, it might be too polished or I don't know, too stifled, or something would, you know, be too static about it. But it arrived organically, and that's why I said, like the other project that we're working on now, it has a whole different set of rules and a different take and a different feel, and it's doing something different. And
I think the most important rule that you're talking about here is don't get into a toxic relationship with somebody.
Yeah, no.
Somebody who's gonna like really just try to destroy you or score points.
Yeah, or they're hungry for something that you have. You know, it's although I was kind of hungry for the empathy and compassion and the, you know, but that's a good one.
Yeah,
I'm not stealing it from you. I'm just taking it on.
There's the dastardly possibility, right, of somebody doing something really
just
but there's also the, you mentioned before, there's also the ways in which we become at two with ourselves, because we're doing the thing and then we're thinking about the reaction to the thing. And and especially if nobody should ever read their own press clippings, especially if they're good, right? because then there's that, right? And then there's that, well, what was I doing then? Or the suggestions, if you just, I mean, it happens to me with this thing, right? With like this podcast thing, which is brand new for me in some way. And it's, and some podcasts get, in 1,000 views, and I've got one that's, pushing 70,000 views.
Wow, and that's
so
cool.
People are making suggestions, like, if you could do like, and then it sort of creeps into that, and it's like, no, I don't want it to creep into that.
No,
I'm not doing it for that, right?
That's a tough. I totally understand what you're talking about. And you want it to maintain a certain integrity of what you set out to begin with, and not become a product.
Even in the most, the worst medium in the world, right, television, you could just watch as the show, which was wonderful,
deteriorates,
starts to become a caricature. Like, it's, you can just hear the focus groups saying, oh, we really like that when that happened, and then so they write a little bit more of that, and then there's a little bit more of that, and pretty soon it's like a caricature, right? These are not the people that I was watching before. Down the tubes. So
that's the danger of this TV series, as opposed to like a limited series or something.
Yes, exactly.
You want to keep this thing going forever, really? Do you?
Right. Exactly.
Why don't we just enjoy what we have?
Right.
And I think that's why we stopped on one project and start a new one, because that freshness has energy. And when I say authenticity, what I'm talking about is a place of where you know yourself pretty well. And you're honoring what you want to express about your relationship to humanity, that it's that it's as honest as it can be. And those are my value systems. But that's, for me, that's what authenticity is maintaining a sense of truthfulness and relatableness, so that I'm inclusive and thoughtful and mindful about the process, and don't set off to do a product, because I'm not interested in products. I my book's going to be a product at some point, and I'd like the book to go out to thousands of people buy our book. But
whatever that magic is, at least has for me, to my for my money, it's in the, I'm pointing over there because that's where the picture is. It's in my view of the cover of my dead. So there it is now.
Yes.
There it is now. And so everybody's got one. So thank you. Thank you for writing that. Thank you for drawing that. Thank you for doing it together. And thanks for being willing to talk about it here. And if there's anything that that I haven't asked or you really wanted to speak about.
I do.
Go for it.
I'm going to promote my dead because I'm really bad at this, but this is a great book, and the holiday seasons are coming and it's not very expensive. It's a simple stocking stuffer that's going to just like blow somebody's mind. And it's on Amazon and it's at Kelsey Books. And that's it.
You're promoting it.
That may or may not be on the cutting room floor. We have no idea.
Oh, I hope not.
Well, I hope it sells a bunch of them, and then I hope you forget about it as you do your next project.
Right. That's right. We're just trying to get it out into the world, because it's actually a really fresh meditations on what we all just went through.
And it is very difficult to ask people to buy the thing. In the end, we want people to read our work and to see our images.
It's support the earth. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Nothing tacky about it, right? Honestly. So John, it's lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I hope you do another complete thing soon so we can do this again. And Jane, lovely to see you. And I know you're in my house, you know, every week or so. And that voice in the other
room.
Right.
That's right. Yep.
So good to see you again.
Yep. Nice to see you too. And thank you so much for having us on Curiosity Invited. It's a great show. I've watched all of them.
That's crazy.
I haven't
watched all of them.
Oh, I love it. I think it's really been great and really interesting and great people. And I like being part of your community. So thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. It's really wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. And there was one question that I wanted to ask. Okay, so there you are writing in the basement, water heater behind you, washer somewhere close by, and right there. And so do you ever do a load of laundry while you're down there?
Yeah, you know, we don't have a dryer yet. So it's a matter of getting it and then putting out. The furnace is behind the water heater. So put it next to the furnace to dry out. And so because we don't have a dryer yet, the laundry takes a long time. So, yeah. But you know, it's a good way to get out of your head.
Absolutely.
Do a couple of chores.
Absolutely. So anyway, lovely to see you both. Lovely to spend time and take care.
All right. Take care. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.